I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. There are two kinds of courage. There's the spontaneous in the moment courage. You just react. You don't think about what you're doing. And of course, that kind of spontaneous action flows from a kind of life that you've lived, a life in which your underlying character and your personal traits and your beliefs, your training and your behavior have developed over a lifetime. Then there's another kind of courage, which is also an expression of a lifetime of facing fears and shouldering burdens. And for me, the distinguishing element between the two kinds of courage is that in the second kind, there is an exercise of choice. In moments of spontaneous acts of courage, the first kind of courage, the choice is absent. Because choice is a matter of deliberation. And when facing an immediate threat, there is no time for deliberation. The presence of choice means the second kind of courage is always an avoidable response. We know we could just walk away. After all, who doesn't want a quiet life? The choice is always ours, whether to act or not, in the second kind of courage. Now, I know that I can be courageous if I have no time to think about whether to get involved or not. But if given the opportunity for deliberation, I'm more likely to shy away from courageous gestures if the choice of not doing so is available to me. This kind of caution is a quality in me that I least admire. I suspect that most of us feel a little bit like that. Therefore, when we see courage in action, we so admire it in others because we know it when we see it. We see in someone like Alexei Navalny, the great Russian dissident, someone who refuses to be made afraid, someone who takes a costly stand. And that quality in Navalny earns our undying admiration. And in the last 2 weeks, the hitherto unlikely figure of Volodymyr Zelensky has become our number one poster boy for this kind of courage. When offered the chance to avoid leading Ukraine's courageous defense and defiance in the face of the other Vlads. Remember that Volodymyr and Vladimir are just the Ukrainian-Russian equivalents of the same name. The other Vlads, vindictive bloodlust. When he had the opportunity to walk away, when the Americans offered him an evacuation, he responded, "The fight is here. I need ammunition, not a ride. I'm the enemy's number one target, and my family is the enemy's number two target." I was relieved to learn that he has subsequently safely evacuated his family, but Kyiv's administrative center is where he remains, marshaling his considerable communication skills and savvy media know-how to continue to inspire his nation and the rest of the free world with his brand of Churchillian courage. Now, you wouldn't expect me at the mention of Churchillian to pass up the opportunity for an invidious comparison. If we compare Zelensky with Boris J., you know who I'm speaking of. Boris thinks he's Churchill. But as the joke goes in Britain, he's really Steve Coogan. Steve Coogan is a well-known comedian. Despite Boris's aspiration to statesmanlike grandeur, a comparison with Zelensky exposes in him that he's a Churchillian wannabe. And I contrast these two characters as a kind of aside, but because it's instructive about the nature of the second kind of courage. Zelensky's sense of moral courage is displayed in his strong sense of purpose. He's a man who knows he's in the defining moment of his life. He grasps his sense of destiny. In this, he emulates the kind of courage shown by Jesus. After coming down from the Mount of the Transfiguration in chapter 9, Luke takes us through a head-spinning whirlwind tour of Jesus' progress through Galilee, healing in some places, exorcising in others, and everywhere confronting his critics. In today's gospel passage, Luke reports an exchange between Jesus and a group of Pharisees. They attempt to warn Jesus that he'd better hightail it out of Dodge, because Herod's after his blood. Luke doesn't give us any hint as to the motivation the Pharisees might have had. It could be a genuine concern for Jesus. After all, Jesus was often in confrontation with Pharisee groups, but he continues to accept dinner invitations from them, and so the Jesus-Pharisee relationship is far from black and white. Perhaps the Pharisee warning is self-serving. After all, Herod's probably not the only one who wants this agitator of the crowds gone from the local scene. We just don't know. Luke doesn't give us any hint as to motive. Like Zelensky, Jesus is no stranger to threats on his life. After having survived several attempts to kill him, the most notorious being when his fellow Nazarethites attempt to throw him off a cliff, Jesus is not going to allow the machinations of someone like Herod to alter his sense of destiny. Describing Herod with the stunning, if not slightly amusing, image of that fox, Jesus asked the Pharisees to go tell him that he's casting out demons and he's performing cures today and tomorrow and on the third day and not before. Then his work will be finished. Today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because prophets are not killed in Galilee. They're killed in Jerusalem. And Jesus already appears to have some sense of the timeline of events, probably dictated by the dates of the coming Passover. He's not going to allow anyone, let alone that fox Herod, to derail him from his destined confrontation with sacred violence. Comparison between Jesus' mission and the Ukrainian resistance personified by Volodymyr Zelensky invites not only a reflection on the nature of courage, but also on the nature of violence. Violence takes several forms, depending on the situation and the context. There's random and there's orchestrated violence. That is, there's ordinary violence, whether spontaneous, personal, or communal. Then there's sacred violence. That is a communal or a collective violence as an instinctive response in defense of a perceived higher cause, be it religious, ethnic, racial, gender motivated in nature. Jesus' path to the cross is the journey to his courageous confrontation with sacred violence. Consistent with the second kind of courage, for Jesus, this confrontation with sacred violence is a deliberate choice. A choice it's not hard to imagine. He had numerous opportunities to avoid. He could walk away at any time. And Luke shows us that he refuses to walk away from his sense of destiny. Sacred violence is as old as humanity. It's so instinctively programmed in us that we cannot imagine any alternative to its cycles of repetitive, endless repetition. Our propensity to remake God in our own image leads us to believe that it's our job to protect God with our sacred violence. Caught in its repetitive grip, we're blind to the ironic paradox that it was our sacred violence that killed Jesus. And each time, our sacred violence continues to strike at the heart of God. It's counterintuitive for us to believe in a God whose protection of us is to die to the enemy's violence, even when the ultimate promise is resurrection. The last thing we need is a God encapsulated by Jesus' image of the mother hen protecting her chicks by offering her breast to the fox, giving her chicks time to scatter. And to break the instinctive grip of sacred violence upon the human psyche, Jesus knew that he, as God's agent, must first demonstrate that it could be done. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. It's only by going to the very source of sacred violence that God, in Jesus, finally and for all time, breaks its power over us. Zelensky is inspiring a Ukrainian resistance to Putin's sacred violence being unleashed upon his nation. Kyiv is the birthplace of the Russian people. It has a higher claim to define the Russian soul than Moscow can muster. And this explains the ferocity of Putin's unleashing of sacred violence. Putin's invasion of Ukraine is nothing short of a struggle to define the essential character of the Russian soul. And one of the hallmarks of sacred violence is its brutality. A brutality more shocking to us because this time it's unleashed on people who are recognizably like us. Ukraine is not the first time Putin has unleashed his sacred violence as a tool of his imperial dreams. But Ukrainians are more like us than his previous victims, Muslim Chechens and Syrians. We identify with Ukrainian suffering, because their suffering could, if Putin has his way, so easily and may inevitably become ours. Volodymyr Zelensky is not Jesus. The comparison breaks down. But in thinking about the nature of his courageous leadership, his refusal to be turned aside from his moral sense of destiny, he is enacting the image Jesus offers of the mother hen and her chicks. An image that Jesus himself will go on to demonstrate on the cross. While gathering the chicks under the hen's protective wings, she distracts the predator by exposing the vulnerability of her breast, which shows us in the larger picture of things the nature of God's action on the cross. We all hope and pray that the courage of the Ukrainian people to confront the sacred violence being visited upon them will result in their victory. Yet the odds remain stacked against them. But the more important truth here is that Zelensky's embodiment of Ukrainian fierce courage, a courage that also courts a terrible vulnerability, has already won a significant moral victory for humanity, whatever the military outcome. On the cross, God broke the power of sacred violence's grip upon the human heart. Jesus demonstrated that the repetition in the cycle of sacred violence is no longer inevitable, being now simply a matter of human choice. Maybe that's something to bear in mind as we journey with Jesus on his way to Jerusalem. Amen.